if you're going through your first salary return, so like if you're going through around the age of 30, I think that it's really important to, and even later on, but I think it's really important to show responsibility, you know, because Saturn is, the way that it works, it's like a wake-up call when you're going through your Saturn return.
Welcome to The Lavenderit Lifestyle, the podcast on personal growth and lifestyle design. My name's Eileen, and I'm here to guide you to shine as your brightest self and create your dream life. We all have a light within and the power to create a life we love. Every Sunday, we'll share thoughtful conversations exploring how we can build a better future for ourselves and our world. Life is an art. Make it your masterpiece. Hello, my loves. Welcome back to the Lavenderit Lifestyle Podcast. It's Eileen. Today's episode is all about astrology, how to use astrology for self-discovery, to deeper understand your purpose, your gifts, your shadows, the lessons you're meant to learn, and more. I personally love astrology, and I've been studying and practicing it since 2018, and we've had a good amount of astrologers on this podcast already. So today's episode is more for those who are already into astrology, who have understood the basics, like their top three, and want to go a little bit deeper on how to understand their birth chart and deeper ways to use astrology as a tool for self-discovery. Our guest today is Larissa Vasile, intuitive astrologer and tarot reader from Transylvania, Romania. Larissa loves to use the art of storytelling to showcase how astrology can be applied to real life, as well as guide others on how to connect to their authentic self and purpose, go in depth into shadow work, or even choose their next relocation place through astrology and astrocartography. A quick note before we begin. Having a vision is powerful, but pairing that vision with a system, that's how transformation happens. The 2026 Artist of Life Workbook helps you design a life you love with reflection, goal setting, and a full structure to stay aligned all year. It's still the best time to get started. You can visit shop.lavenderit.com to get yours. Hi, Larissa. Welcome to the podcast. How are you feeling?
Hi, I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you for being here. So let's start with your personal journey. What first drew you to astrology and this world of like intuitive arts? And what made you trust that this was your path?
Well, it was definitely very intuitive because I initially started with tarot, actually. In 2018 is when I got into tarot, and it was right while I was going through a breakup. So, you know, it was like pretty messy, and tarot really helped me during that time. A few months after, I also experienced loss. So my father passed away, and that was kind of the awakening to like everything within me that is intuitive. It's also because when I was young, I would journal a lot. Like it would just be something that I was very connected to. So I have this feeling like in a past life, I was probably, and this also shows up in my chart, but probably that in a past life, I was someone that was, again, very intuitive and was using words a lot. So I just, when, you know, in this life, when I was young, like I was journaling a lot, and then life happened. So I kind of distanced myself a little bit, still journaling, but not as much. So then after this huge life event happened, it's almost like my intuitive gifts were reawakened. And after my father passed away, I started to get like into, I don't know, into chakras, into anything spiritual, and a lot of depth into astrology. And in the first 3 months, I was already able to like read a chart, and it just felt like astrology was always there. It's just that I had to find my way to it. So yeah, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, that's amazing. So do you feel like you've always had intuitive gifts ever since you were young?
Yeah. And I think especially it was seen through my journaling, but also in school, I was someone that was pretty sensitive to people's emotions. And that's why I would be in a shell. And I feel like I felt very misunderstood. And in astrology, for example, in my birth chart, I have Saturn in my third house. And the third house usually in astrology indicates school years. So usually if you have planets there, there was a story in school years. And Saturn is a planet that works like a teacher. So school years for me were a moment when I kind of hit reality. And I was like, oh, all of this inner world that I formed when I was a kid while I was journaling. I have journaled since I was like 5 years old, probably. My first journal is like, I want to be a star. That was like one of the first things that I was writing down. And I realized then that okay, now real life happens. People don't really work the same way that I do. So that's when I inhibited myself. But later on, and also while discovering astrology and also while building my platform, it was the first time when people actually view my sensitivity as something good and they embraced it. So that's when I started to get again into my gifts somehow. And astrology is just a tool because for me, astrology, tarot, are ways in which I can communicate with the universe. And that's how I look at it. That's why I call myself an intuitive astrologer, especially because I started with tarot first. So in tarot, you have to like use your intuition. And then when it came to astrology, I already had that formed somehow.
I see. Yeah, you describe yourself as an Aquarius mystic from Transylvania. I'm curious why you chose that phrasing. Like, what does that mean to you? And how does that reflect your approach to astrology and tarot?
First of all, I'm an Aquarius, so I'm always going to try to kind of appear different or, you know, word things a little bit differently. But it also has to do with, I guess, the mystery of the place where I'm from and the associations with Transylvania and also Dracula and all of those associations. And I do feel that the place where I'm from holds this strong mystical energy. And it's not even just the surface level is like this story of Dracula, which is actually, you know, like a story that is touristy level. But if you go even deeper, there's a lot of folklore, there's a lot of myth in Transylvania. So yeah, I feel that it makes sense that I'm from there and there's this connection.
Yeah, actually, I think you're the first person I've met from Transylvania, because it is true that the culture has this mystical element to it. Tell us more about that from your lens and then how that influences your work and who you are.
In Romania, it's seen as something that is practiced, but it's also not something that people necessarily use or talk about on a daily basis. But when you look into the culture, you can see that there are like these embedded maybe superstitions or, you know, different like things or themes when you need to see like a tarot reader or an astrologer, and that's how you connect with it. But the way that I like to practice astrology is I like to go in depth. So I feel that this is something new that is still kind of being explored in Romania still. You know, I feel like we're kind of getting there, but it's growing in that sense.
I'm curious, are you a superstitious person then?
Maybe with some things, as I said, it's pretty cultural. So it's some very basic things, like it's natural, you just grow with it. So it kind of happens. But then also within the family, I do have very intuitive women within the family. So like, I really enjoy to have these sort of conversations, like with my mom and my grandma. And we usually talk about like my grandma, even to this day, like she calls me every week and she tells me the horoscope, or like she texts like on, she actually uses Pinterest a lot. And she actually not just like surface level horoscope, but she kind of looks deeper into it. And although I'm the astrologer, she calls me weekly to tell me like what she read about my sign. And to me, like that's so lovely to have this openness where you can talk about spirituality. And there's also moments when maybe I've practiced, I don't know, maybe I went to like a healer, or I've done some sort of like a different practice where I connected to my ancestors or things like that. Like I like to do a lot of try different things. And then I feel always very welcomed by my family to talk about these themes. And then also my mom, like she is very aware and notices the patterns a lot around her. So I think it's embedded within us.
I can relate with my family because I think at least my family, we're Chinese, we're also very superstitious. Like there's certain things my mom was like, do this or don't do this. And she's also very spiritual. She's into like reading like the Chinese version of astrology birth charts. I think that makes it easier to get into this. I was just curious about your culture. So let's talk about astrology as a tool for self-discovery. So you said that, you know, the purpose of your readings is to help people return to their authentic self. How does astrology help us do that? And maybe you can pick out your favorite pieces of what the birth chart can tell you about yourself.
So the first thing is that I feel that there are right now like a lot of astrology interpretations everywhere. And the way that I like to look at astrology is I don't want, I mean, even though I'm an astrologer and obviously there's moments when I do this, but I don't want people to just like be on the internet and then open a video and then get scared by a prediction just because like someone said so. I want them to feel that that is right for them, because not everything that we hear online is going to be right for us. And this is what I mean by authentically connecting to astrology, just kind of understanding and noticing the patterns in your life first before you kind of outsource that energy, before you're like, you know, letting the astrologer decide for you. And I have these videos that are pretty popular with moon mantras. So every full moon and new moon, I just share like a very basic and easy way in which everyone can interpret what that moon means within the chart. It's an Aries moon, so you need to release anger within the area of, and then you have to fill it with the keywords of the house. And then you can choose whatever keywords you want, because a house can mean like multiple things. So basically, you can reclaim your authenticity within astrology by choosing what it means for you rather than by letting others choose that for you. And in terms of placements within the chart, and when we talk about authenticity, it's obviously the whole birth chart. But I really feel that what is really important is how your planets are, for example, distributed within the chart. Like, let's say the houses where you have planets. Like, I really focus a lot in my practice on houses more than just the planets through signs, because the houses can give different flavors within your birth chart. So for example, I'm someone who has 6 planets in the first house, and that's a lot. Like, that's a stellium. And the first house has to do with self. So that tells me that, okay, one of my soul purposes is to always discover myself and always like uncover layers of who I am. And people who have planets within the first house, they're always going to have multiple personality layers. And it can work differently depending on where you have most planets in your chart.
Yeah. So like, basically the houses in your chart where you have planets is where your life has more focus, right? In that area.
It's where your life has more focus, but there's also this misconception that the houses where you don't have planets. First of all, there's a misconception that they don't exist at all. That's something that I often see in my comments, and they do, like we all have all 12 houses. But then also there are some houses where you don't have planets, and there's this misconception that, okay, if I don't have planets in like a relationship house, for example, that means that I'm not going to have relationships. And in reality, that's actually an area of your life that flows more naturally, because there's no lesson there. Like, when there's going to be a planet within an area of your life, you're going to be so focused on it that you're going to try to figure it out. And sometimes, you know, there's things to learn there. There's always going to be things happening there. But when there's, you know, no planets, it can flow a little bit more naturally. Obviously, this is like still generalized though.
No, that makes sense though, because I think some people get confused on like when they have no planets in a house and they're like, what does that mean? I love that. Tell us more about what you think is like the most overrated or underrated parts of the chart that people are focusing on.
With overrated, it's definitely the sun sign, you know, that's like everywhere. Yeah. The thing with that is that it's more focused on pop astrology, and actually like it's, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's more important. A rising sign is not necessarily more important, but in order to write even a horoscope, for example, you need to know the rising sign. You need to know the birth time, right? So most people are focused on the sun sign because it was easier. Someone decided at some point, you know, it's easier to just know the date and the month you were born in rather than the birth time, because that's too complicated. So let's just do horoscopes for that. But that's like not accurate. I mean, it can feel accurate based on energy.
Do you see rising as more important than your sun sign in a person's chart?
I wouldn't say it's more important. They're equally important, but I see it important when it comes to interpreting what's going to happen, for example, like horoscopes or predictions, because that dictates like where this is happening within your chart. And it's more about, again, the house where this is happening rather than like how it interacts with your sun sign, which it might not interact with your sun sign at all. So I feel like that's very overrated and a misconception again.
You're talking about when there's like these videos or resources online where they're talking about like, this is calling all Libras. When they say Libra, they mean Libra rising, not Libra sun, right?
Yeah, that's true.
If you think they're talking about your sun sign, it's messed up. So really it's the rising sign is easiest to do horoscopes.
That's how you actually do the horoscopes. But people use the sun sign just because it's more widely known. And obviously it's going to work better, but it doesn't mean that it cannot be accurate. It's just that it's not, like, it can be accurate just in terms of energy maybe. So you can still resonate with that if that's like a message that needs to find you, for sure. But then it's not accurate in terms of like how it's actually interpreted. So kind of doesn't make sense. It's weird that it got to that point. But, you know, we're trying to, in society, we're sometimes trying to just like find shortcuts to get to things. So
how would you help someone who is kind of, they understand the basics of astrology, but they don't know the deeper level? How would you help them show where to use their chart to explore like their life purpose or the lessons that they have to learn?
Besides understanding what are those houses that are being highlighted, which is really important to kind of understand the core of your chart, there's also the North Node, which is connected to purpose. That one, you can also just calculate it on different platforms. Like whatever you calculate your chart online, that's going to show you where your North Node is and the sign that it's in and the house that it's in. The North Node comes together with the South Node, and there are two mathematical points that are calculated based on the moon. So they're always connected to the moon, and that's why they're responsible for eclipses. So the North Node and South Node are basically fated energies, and that's why they're connected to purpose. It's almost like you come into this life with a North Node in a specific sign, and that talks more about purpose. And this energy is very interesting, and I've been diving deeper into it because a lot of the times, again, another misconception is that people think that their purpose is their career. A lot of the times, like I do see this, like let's say people book a reading and they're like, okay, I want to know what my purpose is. And then they're like, I've been studying graphic design, and I've been doing this, like what should I do next? And then in all my readings, I take some time to first explain the difference, because in astrology, the North Node is a different point, but career is maybe our 10th house or our 6th house or our 2nd house. Like there's other indicators of career, but your purpose, your North Node can be in other houses too, or it can be, it doesn't have to be related. So I look at purpose, since it's connected to the moon, as more of a feeling. And that's why like understanding your North Node better makes you understand better like what feeling you need to connect to. For example, my North Node is in the 9th house. So the 9th house has to do with travel. It has to do with exploration. It has to do with anything that's expansive. So I know that whenever I travel to a place, like my purpose is good. Something about my purpose gets activated for me, or when I learn something new, or when I expand to some extent. And that can also be in career. Of course, like there's ways to do this in career too, such as like I am, because the 9th house can be learning and teaching. So maybe I'm teaching a course. That can be another way, right? There's so many layers to purpose that when we just put it so much on our career, and I think I also am, I did that at some point, you know, like when I discovered astrology and it just worked for me very well, and I kind of overly identified with it. And then I figured out that who am I like outside being an astrologer? I don't really know. And I started to discover that too. And that's when you realize that even if you are to get that career, you're probably not going to feel purposeful if that's all you think that is going to make you feel purposeful. So,
yeah, I think that's a great point, that our career is not necessarily the same thing as our purpose. And also people focus so much on like career, or maybe some people focus all on relationships, but like the chart reminds you, you have all of these elements in your life. Like some might be more emphasized than others, but you have so many facets about you.
That's really nice. I mean, the North Node in the 9th house, that's also Aquarius. Like it's very, it has that unique flavor to it. It's all about exploration and expansion. So definitely maybe even for you, like travel kind of helps you to expand your purpose.
Something else that I got from this is like your purpose doesn't necessarily mean you have to do something or give something to the world. It's sometimes your purpose is to learn, like what you said. I think people typically think purpose is like, oh, I have to do something in the world. So give us other examples of how purpose is not just going out and doing something, but maybe you can pick a few houses and explain purpose in different areas.
Yeah, it's more like a feeling. And I've noticed that when people, or even for me, because I always like to just use astrology for me first and then go ahead and teach it to other people. But even for me, like I realized that, for example, with my North Node in the 9th house, which is expansion, the 9th house is associated to Sagittarius. So then the 9th house as a feeling, the way that I look at it is freedom, right? So like whenever I feel free, I connect with my purpose. And that can just be like if I dance or if I cook, and that makes me feel free. And then if you have it, let's say in a relationship house, in like the seventh house, maybe the fifth house as well, usually like people would think that, oh, like there are certain people that they're asking me, I have my north and my seventh house, but I don't want to get married, or, you know, I'm not that interested in relationships. And the seventh house obviously has to do with relationships, but it has to do with also the feeling behind, and not just romantic relationships. It can have to do with like friendships, but why do you want to be around people? Like, what is the feeling they're actually seeking? And the feeling is usually belonging. It's usually warmth, you know? So like when you connect deeper with that, like your purpose, you feel purposeful even in the right now. And then what I've noticed from me is that when I connect with that feeling, it actually brings the manifestation of that in my life, rather than when I try to seek it. Like, let's say I try, like someone with the seventh house north node would try to seek a relationship, and instead they could just connect with that feeling of warmth in the moment, or let's say they can spend more time with people that they already have in their life, right? And that's one way that if they want to, they can attract relationships too.
Oh, I love this. Okay. So it's your purpose is about embracing and feeling that feeling of the house, not necessarily doing anything in it. And then that having that feeling, it kind of guides you to where you're meant to go in life. Cause it like feeling the feeling is the step in manifestation, right? It's the step of like attracting what you want. I love that so much.
Yeah.
Okay. So your account is called Saturn Revolution. And I can tell that you like Saturn is an important part of your chart. So tell us more about why you chose that name, and tell us what you've learned about Saturn and integrating its lessons.
I chose Saturn Revolution, first of all, because I am a Capricorn rising and an Aquarius. And I have 3 planets in Capricorn, 3 in Aquarius, all in my first house. So that's like the first house itself. So basically I'm a combination between Aquarius and Capricorn. So if Capricorn is Saturn, because the ruler of Capricorn is Saturn, Aquarius is also ruled by Saturn, but it's also ruled by Uranus. So I kind of put Saturn together with Revolution, which is my Aquarian energy. So it's the combination between like the Capricorn and Aquarian. And that's how I look at myself. I'm a combination between structure and getting very disciplined, as well as this unique, surprising, authentic element of Aquarius. And yeah, I just created all of this in my hometown, like while I was, you know, having like a year where, yeah, I was just like, I moved back to my hometown after my dad passed away. So that was like the year where, although it was again, like a year where I had to kind of figure out who I am and what am I going to do with my life now. It was actually the year when I created this. And that's also not a coincidence because, as I said, I have Saturn in my third house in my chart, and the third house is school, but it can also represent your hometown because it has to do with your immediate environment, as opposing to the ninth house, which is more like your travel and exploration. And the third house is where you're familiar with. So I created this page also from my, you know, my immediate environment, from my hometown. And then also on top of that, like when I created a page, I didn't think of like the chart it's going to have, but whatever you created actually has a birth chart depending on the time you do it. So you can cast a chart for it. And then when I check back at the page and the chart it has Saturn in the 10th house, which is the house of career.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So there's a lot of like Saturnian themes in my life. And the reason why I love Saturn is because it's a paradox. Like Saturn is almost like this father figure that, you know, comes into your life, and it gives you a hard lesson, especially initially. Like we feel the Saturn lesson, like when we are young, we usually, especially the house where we have Saturn, that is the area of our life where we grow with some sort of like a hardship, or it's something that it feels like it's moving slower for us. So for example, like if you have Saturn in the second house, that would mean like financially, let's say you struggle with that, especially in the first part of your life, or let's say your family struggles with finances. So you also feel it. Within the third house, for me, it was more about like my school years and struggling there. In the seventh house, it can definitely be about like struggling with relationships, or your family can struggle with relationships, or, you know, the connection within your family can also be like that. Or let's say the 10th house, you struggle to find like your career path. So that's something that you start off with. And it feels very discouraging. But then the lesson of Saturn is like, the more you keep going, and the more you show up and take responsibility, the more you're going to see rewards in the long run. So the reason why Saturn is giving you that hardship is because if you didn't have it, you would take it for granted. But because you have it, it's almost like you start to look at this area of your life as something that you really want. So you work very hard for it. And then when you get there, it feels so much more rewarding because you know what you've been through. And it's so interesting because everyone has it in a different place. So everyone feels different about whatever they have it. So if someone like finds this difficult within their career, you know, someone else wouldn't, it would be like, you know, this, I didn't experience this, but I experienced it here. So yeah. It's really interesting to also see, like, look at your friend's chart and see like what they struggled with, for example.
I love that so much too, because it's a reminder that everybody has their own struggle, but in a different area of life, and you can't see it sometimes. But also the lesson of Saturn is that it's hard and it's difficult, but it's going to be worth it, right? It's like the most rewarding because you overcame more.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like I've been dealing with it as a Capricorn rising, and usually Capricorn risings know what I'm talking about, because being ruled by Saturn means that hardship is something that happens to you and you kind of get resilient, you know, as you grow. And actually I have this thing, like Capricorn rising sometimes, I feel like their life sometimes gets better as they grow, just because like they start off with a little bit more of a hard time. And then, you know, it feels like they reach, like they do better when they're adults, because they're ruled by Saturn, which is like an adult. So
interesting. Okay. Any other tips on navigating Saturn transits or Saturn returns more successfully? What are the tips you have for people going through anything hard?
First of all, I think it depends if you're going through your first one or your second one. It's very different. The first one, yeah, it's going to be around the age of 28, 29, 30. And then the second one is going to be around the age of 60. And I've seen differences in my clients, like depending on when I do the reading. Sometimes, you know, as someone who is just going through their first Saturn return, sometimes when I do readings for someone who is going through it through the second time, it feels like, wow, like I'm so in awe of, you know, those people, because it just feels like they're so mature and they've grown so much and they have such a different understanding of life. It's really cool to see. But first of all, like if you're going through your first Saturn return, so like if you're going through around the age of 30, I think that it's really important to, and even later on, but I think it's really important to show responsibility, you know, because Saturn is, the way that it works, it's like a wake-up call when you're going through your Saturn return. So it's like whatever you've been sleeping on in your life, it's going to come to you and it's going to be like, hey, you have to face this in your life. And it might be themes that maybe you didn't think about before, or you were like, I'm going to do that tomorrow, or you were like, you know, I don't need to think about this. And then Saturn comes and it kind of pushes you to do so. And if you choose to ignore it more, that's when it's going to be a little bit harder, because it's almost like you're not integrating the lesson. But what Saturn wants to see is just a little bit of progress. So even if you're just paying attention to it a little bit, even if you're just like setting some time aside to be like, okay, I have to like face this, you know, it's actually going to be easier for you, the whole transition. And then also with the second Saturn return, it's more about like understanding and integrating also what you've learned in the past. So it's almost more like what resonates with me anymore and what doesn't, and how can I just start like fresh? But they're very similar, like overall in terms of themes.
Okay, so moving on, let's talk about how you like to read a chart. I know it's hard to explain, but what advice or tips do you have for people trying to understand their chart and to do it intuitively? It can be very confusing.
It really depends what you're looking at, because like it really depends. Like every time I do a reading, I like to first ask the question, like, what are you interested in? It usually works better when you want to read your chart and you know the intention you have. So like the first thing would be like, what is your intention? Because otherwise you can obviously look at the chart overall and there's going to be some themes, but I feel like it works best when you kind of know what you're looking at. The houses are really important to just understand the meaning of the houses. And then also we have different houses and different signs too. So depending on what sign you have a house in, or depending what planets you have in a house, then you kind of know that, okay, if your question is like career related, for example, you can look at the 10th house or the second house or the sixth house. If your question is relationships related, you can look at the fifth house or the seventh house. So first of all, it's good to have like an intention, but I think it's also really fun to sometimes look at the elements of your chart. That's like a really simple way to kind of start with. So for example, you look at all of the planets and you understand what is the elemental distribution. So you kind of understand, let's say if you have more fire or more air, you might also have all of them like within your personal planet. So then you know that you're someone who's more adaptable, or you might only have, like, for example, in my chart, I mostly have air and earth. So I know that, okay, I'm someone who is very grounded, and also I'm pretty good with communication, but maybe sometimes I lack fire, so I'm not as assertive, or maybe I lack a little bit of water, so maybe I'm not as emotional at times, like I can be cold. So that kind of helps you to also know what you need to integrate more of. And sometimes when it comes to elements, I also like to integrate it literally. So for example, if someone like me who doesn't really have a lot of water in their chart, I actually like to swim. Whenever I swim, like, I can process my feelings. Like, it's almost like I don't understand my feelings at all. I'm trying to understand them with my brain because I'm an air sign. And then when I go into water, I just feel my feelings and I feel so good and relaxed afterwards. So for example, if you lack earth in your chart, then definitely, like, I don't know, going and sitting by a tree, or, you know, connecting deeper with the earth in general, to nature, might be something helpful, because you might somehow avoid that without even realizing. If you lack fire within the chart, then, you know, lighting a candle can be helpful, or in general, just kind of being closer to warmth, or like by the fireplace or things like that. And if you lack air in the chart, then maybe, I don't know, flying on a plane, or, you know, again, going for a walk and feeling the air, the breeze. There's like a lot of ways that you can do to connect with the element.
Yeah, that's really great advice, especially because, like, I think people forget, like, if they're missing something in their chart, they just think, oh, that's not important. But you're saying, like, it's actually more important to, like, actively integrate it in your life, because you're missing an element. Like, I'm missing a lot of earth, so I do need to, like, go outside and connect with nature. Otherwise, I'm just, like, in my head.
And it actually works, like, very similar with modalities, too. So there are, like, three modalities. There's fixed signs, there's immutable signs, and cardinal signs. And depending on, like, what an exercise that I like to do is, when I first meet someone, for example, I look at their big tree, so like the sun, moon, and rising, and I see what modality they have. For example, I have all three of them because I'm a Capricorn rising, which is cardinal. I have a Virgo moon, which is mutable, and I'm an Aquarius sun, which is fixed. So that means that, okay, I can kind of, like, cardinal signs, which are Capricorn, Cancer, Aries, and Libra, they're going to be the ones that are going to be able to initiate things. So if you have more of this within your big three, then you're going to know that you're a good initiator, but you're not really good at sustaining that energy. If you have fixed in your big three, so let's say Aquarius, Leo, Taurus, Scorpio, then you're good at sustaining energy. Like, you're just kind of focused on, you're consistent, but maybe you lack flexibility sometimes. And if you have mutable in your big three, then that is the other sign. So Virgo, Sagittarius, Gemini, and Pisces, then you are more flexible. So for example, I really like to look at this, and I can tell if someone has like a lot of fixed in their big three, that they're someone who maybe don't like change and they're going to be very stubborn, for example.
I see. Okay. Love it. Love it. Where can people look at in their chart if they want to find, like, their gifts, like what they're, you know, like kind of like their gifts that they're meant to use in this life, whether it brings them joy or fulfillment or something?
The most known one is definitely the sun sign, because that's like the way that we shine our identity. That's also something that we're very familiar with usually, and we naturally embody it. And that's why it's our gift, because we're just like pretty good at it. There's also something that's opposing the north node, and that's the south node. And the south node is always going to be in the opposing energy of the north node. And I look at the south node as past life gifts, actually, because our south node is our the purpose that maybe we had in a past life, like something that we did in a past life, and it kind of shows who we were. So then, because we already did that thing, we come in this life already prepared with that. And our purpose is just to move more towards the opposing energy, which is the north node. So with the south node, that is more definitely like, yeah, just gifts we bring from a past life. So for example, I have my south node in Pisces, and that's the only water thing that I have in my chart. So it's also in my third house, which has to do a lot with the mind, thinking, writing. So that's where I kind of get my intuitive gifts. And that's what I'm looking at it. Okay, like in a past life, I was someone that was very intuitive because my south node is in Pisces. So that's like something more that comes from a past life. But in this life, it's definitely the sun sign. In general, I feel like the whole chart can share your gifts. So it's a little bit hard to just narrow it down to, because there's a lot of gifts that you can look at in general.
You also guide people through shadow work using astrology. So what is your approach to shadow work with astrology and looking at the chart?
The way that I practice astrology, as I said, it's based on what I'm going through. So last year, I was going through a very, shadow-driven year, in the sense that I was doing a lot of shadow work within myself. And that's when I dove really deep into it, like I understood deeper what it is. And I started to look for patterns within the chart. And that's when I hosted my first shadow work workshop. And since then, I've been doing like readings. I mean, I look at houses here. There are four houses within the chart, which represent our shadow. The first one is the fourth house. The fourth house is like our most private self. It's also our family. So where we come from in terms of like the environment we grew up in. So that's a side of us that maybe not many people get to see or to know. And sometimes, you know, we can avoid it or we cannot face it because it feels so hard to kind of look at. So in a reading, we definitely like check the fourth house in a shadow work reading. Then I also like to look at the seventh house. And this is also super interesting because for me, the seventh house is our shadow when it comes to like ourselves. Because if you look at the chart, it works like this. So this is where the ascendant is, and this is where the descendant is, and this is the opposing energy of our ascendant. So our descendant is always going to be like our shadow. The way I look at it is like your ascendant is the same as your rising sign. So if your ascendant is like who you are, it's your face, it's how you show up, it's your appearance, then your descendant is somewhere here in the back of your mind, right? Because it's in the opposing energy. So you cannot see it. But the only way you can see it is if someone stands in your back and maybe tells you like, you know, this is what I see, like a mirror. So when I look at the chart as a shadow, I look at the seventh house as this is the side of you that you don't like about yourself. But other people in relationships, they mirror it back to you. So for example, I'm a Capricorn rising. My seventh house is always going to be Cancer. I don't identify at all with Cancer energy. So I used to not until I was like, okay, I'm actually pretty sensitive in relationships. I'm pretty clingy, you know, even if that's a side of me that I don't like. Mm-hmm. For example, like what's your rising sign?
Gemini rising. So Sag.
Sagittarius.
But my moon is Sagittarius too.
Okay, that helps, you know, like when we have another planet in the same sign, it kind of helps. There's still a side of Sagittarius energy that maybe you don't know or you need to discover, or a side of Sagittarius that gets uncovered when you're closer to people or in a relationship, in a closer relationship, and you get more adventurous or you get more maybe impatient, you know, or the side of you that's more rational, like Gemini is not there anymore. And the side of you that's more fiery comes up. So that's like one way that I like to do shadow work. And then there's also the eighth house, which is the next one. That is the side of us that we tend to hide from others. It's again, very, just like our hidden emotions usually. So there's our fears are there a lot of the times. And then there's also the 12th house, which is our subconscious self. So that's like, it's very hard to identify our 12th house. And it usually comes up when we do spiritual work or in our dreams, because it's subconscious. So whenever we connect to our subconscious.
Okay. So if someone is like going through something difficult, your advice is like, look to those houses and see what's happening. Kind of like, how can you make it actionable? Like if someone is listening, they want to look at their house, how can they use their chart to learn, okay, what is the lesson I need to learn through seeing like what's in these houses?
So I think the easiest way to start is definitely with your descendant, because you always know that it's going to be the opposing or the sister sign of your rising sign. So then if you just Google, like if your rising sign is, I don't know, Aries, and you Google Aries sister sign, it's going to be Libra. So you're going to be able to just figure it out pretty well. And then it's just like think of Libra traits and think of maybe even write them down on a list. Like, you know, Libra is cooperative. Maybe it is sometimes people pleasing, or, you know, there are certain tendencies that can come up with Libra energy. And then try to look at where are the ways in which you are that way as well. In which ways you feel the same way, in which ways you feel like you are Libra. And that's going to be, sometimes it can be triggering. Sometimes it can be like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm not people pleasing. I'm an Aries rising. You know, like I don't have these traits within me, but that's going to show you, okay, there's a trigger there. It means you, like, you didn't integrate this side of you. And there can be some ways in which you can do that by just like befriending more of that Libra energy. So trying to be more cooperative, or trying to observe ways in which you're people pleasing and things like that.
Yeah. Cause every sign has like a positive and a shadow side, right?
Yeah.
Like what I'm trying to get at is astrology can give you clues on like how you heal, or like the lessons you're meant to learn. And what you're saying is like, let's say someone has like their 12th houses in a sign. You're saying like, look up that sign's shadow qualities and then like reflect, do I have these?
That's a really good way to do it. But it also depends on like which house we're talking about. Like if it's the 7th house, as I said, it's more about that. But if it's the 12th house, for example, for the 12th house, it's subconscious. So I would say try to notice that sign when you meditate or in your dreams. For example, my 12th house is in Sagittarius and my dreams are always pretty violent, you know, and that's not something that like I see in my day-to-day life, but it's almost like my fiery side that comes up in my dreams.
Because you listed a few charts that are good for shadow work. So maybe go through them again. So 4th house, what would you look up for that sign?
Again, it's good to kind of look at the shadow of this, actually. Look at the shadow of the sign of the 4th house and then see in which way that manifested within your family. Then try to kind of see the light of it. Like, how can you turn it into something that kind of helped you in some way? You know, if this was like people were secretive, okay, but how did that help me? Like, in maybe now I know how to, I don't know, be more like less trustworthy, and that helps me somehow, you know. So try to do like look at it differently. The 7th house, it's like look at the shadow of that sign. The 8th house, it's all about our fears. So this side of us, it's going to be a side of us that, again, it's like what we fear doing, or what we fear sharing. So if you have it in Leo, for example, I have it in Leo, that means that when I'm being more confident even, or when I'm trying to take up more space, I feel uncomfortable. So that's where you need to get out of your comfort zone a little bit and try to, yeah, just be uncomfortable within that feeling too.
Now, I know we wanted to talk a little bit about astrocartography, which is the astrology of travel, relocation. So why don't you explain that to us and how we can activate different versions of us depending on where we live or where we travel to?
Yeah, so astrocartography is the astrology of travel and relocation, and it was founded by Jim Lewis. So even if you just like, he has a book on it and everything is written there as well. Like if you want to interpret it on your own, so that's quite easy with the book. And you can just calculate your chart online, like if you search astrocartography calculator. And the way that it works is that it puts, like Jim Lewis put the chart on top of the map of the world. So it's like it layered it on top of it. But the thing is that there's different time zones in the world, right? So depending on where you are born, you would have a different rising sign. So that's how the map works, that depending where you would go, you would have a different rising sign. So you would have your houses. As I said, the rising sign dictates your houses. You have planets in different houses. So basically the map just shows in which houses or angles specifically, you have these planets. And what this is telling us is that whenever we travel to a different place, we actually live a different birth chart, or we obviously, our chart is the same. Our birth chart is the same, but we embody a different energy wherever we travel. And depending on where we have this on the map, so you're going to see the 4 angles there, the ascendant, the descendant, the MC, and IC. But for example, like let's just take the ascendant, which is our self-expression, and it's going to show up on the map as AC. So whenever we go to like an AC line, we know that, okay, that's a place where I can express myself very well. So that's one example. But then there's also all of the planets laid on top of the map. So it's pretty complicated. When I do personalized readings for this, and it takes me like around 2 hours or something to prepare for each reading because there's just so many. It feels like math when I do it. So I do recommend like actually a reading for this, but it's still fun to uncover it yourself just to confirm certain themes. For example, I have a lot of clients that get, I don't know, like they tell me that, oh, actually I have like ancestry from here, but you know, the person never told me, but I mentioned this place because they have, let's say, the moon on the IC there. So like they feel at home there. So I mentioned this place and then they're like, oh, actually I've never been to Ireland, but I have like my, like, I don't know, grandmother from there or something. Yeah. And you know, so it's really reassuring to use it. Yeah.
So interesting. Are there specific points on the map that you would recommend people to travel to because it's like good luck or like better for them or they'll have good experiences, and what to like be more cautious about?
Yeah, that's also a little bit of a misconception. Like online, you're just going to find that Jupiter and Venus is the best line. But in reality, it depends on your chart. Like it really just depends on your chart. So the way that I look at it is like, if you have in your chart a lot of fire, for example, then going to a Mars line, which is the ruler of Aries, a Jupiter line, which is the ruler of Sagittarius, or a Sun line, which is the ruler of Leo, that's going to make sense to you and you're going to feel good there. But if you are a Libra, which, you know, doesn't like confrontation too much, when you go to a Mars line, that's going to feel like, you know, so the way that I look at it is you can look at your big three, see the planets that are ruling your big three. So I'm a Capricorn rising, it's ruled by Saturn. Then for me, going to a Saturn line should be okay. Right. So that's the way that I look at it. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's not so black and white because people are like, oh, just don't go to the Saturn line because you'll have difficulties. But for someone like you, it's okay because it goes with your chart.
And it's anyway okay. Like I never tell people like, you know, don't go here. Like, you know, you can go anywhere you want at the end of the day. Yeah. It's just that maybe be a little bit cautious if, you know, the energy is different.
Okay. So what are your like daily practices? Like how do you practice this stuff in on your daily or weekly lifestyle?
Actually, my sixth house, which is the house of like daily routines, is in Gemini. So I don't really have like a daily practice, or every time I try to keep up with one, I get bored. Yeah. So I have moments when, let's say, I meditate more often, and moments when I'm just bored of meditation. I'm just going to do something else. So I try to experiment with different things. But when it comes to astrology specifically, I do like to keep a track of the moon. I feel like that is the kind of easiest way to keep track of things. Whenever there's a new moon, I'm setting a new goal for the next 6 months. And I'm also setting 3 steps that I can take to reach that goal. And most of the times, like it actually happens because I'm just putting the intention out there and I also have my steps.
And why is it for the next 6 months? Just curious.
Because that's the cycle of the moon. So for example, like when there's going to be a new moon in Libra, for example, coming up soon. It takes 6 months for there to be the full moon in Libra. So it's almost like we get to the culmination of that energy. Like we start on a new moon with new energy, a new chapter. And then in the next 6 months, that goal can be achieved because there's almost like a culmination of that.
Got it. Got it.
And in terms of tarot, I've been using it more lately for very like mundane questions, you know, like when I don't really know what decision to make, I don't really know how to schedule my day. Like I'm even asking like, would it be better to start with this or would it be better to start with this? Or I sometimes use it for timing as well. I really like using tarot to time things.
What do you mean by timing? Like, how do you do that?
Like, for example, if I want to know when it's like a better time to start a project or things like that, I like to use the main elements within the tarot deck. So wands usually in tarot are the fastest energy. So that's going to be days. Then swords are weeks, cups are months, and pentacles are years. So based on that, but obviously if I'm asking like, when should I start a project and it says 5 years, you know, I'm gonna maybe.
How are you pulling it? Are you pulling like just one card and seeing like five of this or like that? Or are you doing like, what day should I launch? And then you pull like a month day, a
No. So first of all, I just pull like one card and if it gives me the answer, that's it. But if it's like very far away, then I'm like, okay, what is the closest date that I can do that? Like maybe that's the furthest, but what is the closest? And I kind of do it until it kind of makes sense. But I also use astrology as well. Like for example, when I'm trying to launch something, I make sure that it's not a retrograde, first of all, or maybe it's not eclipse season. And I kind of look at my chart and if there's any nice aspects to my chart.
Alrighty. So if there's like any other tip that you would share with someone who is loving astrology and wants to learn more about it, like how do they deepen their practice understanding their chart? What tip would that be?
First of all, it would be to trust their intuition, you know, like with interpretations, to not just read everything and then take it as like, this is how it is for me, but to try to almost like interpret it for themselves by taking different elements. So for example, if instead of reading online, like an interpretation of Mars and Libra, learning what Mars is separately, and then learning what Libra is separately, and then learning what maybe the fifth house is separately, if they have Mars and Libra in the fifth house, and then putting it all together and trying to figure it out by themselves. And whatever comes to their mind first, such as, oh, maybe this explains why I'm so creative or why I'm drawn to graphic design, right? So if that comes to your mind, that's true, you know, because a lot of times we tend to doubt ourselves. So I think that would be my...
Yeah, that's great. Because in astrology, so many things can mean multiple things, right? Like a house can mean a lot of things. A sign, a planet can mean multiple things. It's hard to know which one is it talking about. But if you're reading for yourself, you can use your intuition.
Yeah. And your like experience by yourself, because you're the only one who truly knows.
Finally, if you were to leave the listeners with just one final message or piece of advice, what would that be?
I know that right now, I feel like the astrology of everything is quite all over the place and kind of everyone feels overwhelmed in general. So I think it would just be to have practices that make them feel good without necessarily chasing something that's in the future to make them feel good. So instead of looking at like, you know, I'm going to wait for, again, getting this job, getting this relationship, or, you know, like getting to this point, and that's when I'm going to feel satisfied with myself. Obviously, it's good to like try for more, but also try to slow down and stop and ask like, what am I grateful in the right now? And how can I feel good right now? And that's actually a lot of times for me, it reveals the next steps. So
I love that so much. All right, Larissa, where can we find you online?
So my main channel is on Instagram. That's where I post reels and posts as well. But I've also launched my astrology membership recently, and that's where I go more in depth. And I host live new moon and full moon calls. And that's where we interpret it by ourselves. Like we just understand exactly what this means for us and how to interpret it. I also started a YouTube channel, but I'm still trying to be consistent with it because I'm trying to do so many things at once. So yeah, those are the main ones.
Amazing. All right. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your knowledge with us. I really enjoyed it. And I hope our listeners did too.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me. This was amazing. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to The Lavender Lifestyle. If you like the podcast, please share your support by leaving a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can also subscribe to our podcast YouTube channel at youtube.com/lavenderlifestyle and follow our Instagram @lavenderlifestyle. Sending you so much love. Bye.